Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, yeah. Friday afternoon, Mike Max helping take you home. News Talk 830 WCCO filling in for Chad Hartman.
Take you home?
Take you home. Remember Cannon?
Yeah, but we're not. There's still people still working here. This is a working day.
Friday.
Oh, you think people are getting...
We shut the office down at 2 o'clock.
We do here.
Yep.
That's why we're CCO. We're leaving at 2.
I know, because I couldn't get in. Oh, we can? Okay, just play a best of, okay?
I was going to say.
It doesn't go the full, I don't have a full hour, but.
Well, I guess about 2:30,
yeah,
right?
I guess through the first couple minutes. Fun stuff. It's fun when, it's not fun, it's interesting and exciting to live in this state when what happens last night happens out in western Minnesota, kind of down by where I grew up, Redwood Valley and Wabasso area. Wabasso and Gaylord in the same conference, but Gaylord the furthest east, as you know, Adam, and Wabasso the furthest west. So they were actually 60 miles away, but we were in the same conference. But every time I see them, you think always about, of course, the places that you've been. And so when I saw it, first of all, I had to correct a lot of people. It's not Wabasso. It's Wabasso. Bass. But above and beyond that, some of that video was incredibly compelling that we saw. And obviously in this day and age, we see more and more compelling video. And it made me think I don't think I have ever seen a tornado. I may have seen a funnel cloud once or twice, and I wasn't sure if it was or not, or somebody thought it was. Sometimes you feel like you've seen them because you've seen so many on TV, but I've never seen a tornado, have you?
I was thinking about this the other day. I do not believe I've seen one actually on the ground in person. I have seen funnel clouds, but, and you know, you mentioned the area you're just talking about. That's kind of Minnesota's tornado alley.
It is.
You know, because I went to Gustavus. I was
getting to that. Because you were not there, though, when they hit the big one, did they?
No, but that was, well, I had left already. That was my graduating year, 98.
Oh, it was. I was trying to think what year that was.
So I had finished early. You know, had the credits I needed, you know, hitting the books.
Oh, so that semester would have been yours, but you were too far ahead of the game?
I was ahead of the game.
Yeah.
No, actually, I was behind the game because I had transferred.
That sixth year, you finally
yeah, right? No. It was like eighth year down there. No, so I had finished my J-term class was my final credit, and I had interned down at a radio station in Iowa for that credit where I knew a guy who was working, and I got hired down there, so that was my first radio job, so I was done.
Your J-term was spent in Iowa.
Yep, so it was March.
By the way, for people that don't know, J-term is us Mayackers talk about
this. Yeah, that's right.
J-term is a class. You take one class in January,
right.
Preferably something that you wouldn't normally take
exactly.
For fun.
Give you an interest.
And then some people will travel.
Yep.
Some people will take the time off and work to pay their tuition.
Yep.
But it's kind of a cool way that you can take a whole concentrated from I guess Christmas break till the end of January, you can
exactly.
do whatever you want.
So I interned down
yep.
there, so and I got a course credit, and they just hired me because it was this brand new little small radio station. And I was doing the morning show. I think it was March 28th. Somebody might correct me that day of the tornado.
I was trying to think. Was it
kind of
end of March, right?
It was end of March. And I remember going into the radio station that morning, and it was the lead story on CBS News that morning. That tornadoes struck southern Minnesota, including the campus of Gustavus Adolphus College, and I couldn't believe it. And then I went back for graduation in May, and that's when I first set eyes on the destruction that that tornado did, and it did massive destruction to the city of St. Peter and the college. And even the few times I've been back, I shake my head like, man, it's so different.
Where are all the mature trees?
The mature trees are gone. It did, though, I will say this, the rebuilding of it made like 169, the main street through St. Peter.
Yeah.
That looks a lot better than it used to.
Yep.
Just from the rebuilding aspect. So there was some positives from it. But my sister also went to Gustavus. She was actually down there driving home. They were further south, and they had come through like literally maybe 15 minutes after the tornado went through. And my sister still talks about how she just burst into tears because it was so devastating, everything that was.
Oh, she was that close to the scene?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she came through about 15 minutes after the tornado hit.
Well, I had a friend of mine, Mike Walsh from Gaylord, who was still a friend, and they were in St. Pierre. They'd pulled into Godfather's Pizza, yep. A landmark, right?
Yes.
And I can't remember if they pulled in because they knew the weather was and they needed safety, or if it was just that they had pulled in and it happened. But I remember him telling me the last thing he saw as he walked into the restaurant was a car that was being lifted into the air.
Jeez.
On the street. Yeah. And then everybody was heading towards whatever the basement is there, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I lived right above, right on that street there, right above the pizza shop. And that, I remember I had left, so I sublet my apartment to another guy, and they had the wall completely ripped off the building, totally exposed the apartment, you know, sucked everything out of the apartment.
Wow.
And yeah, it was just, but it was spring break, so all the students.
It was spring break.
I will
right?
say yeah. this too, but like, you know, you know the campus there, North and Sorensen are the dorms that are right on the edge of the hill. So it's great because you get a dorm there, and you got windows, and you look out on the valley of St. Peter. You can see downtown St. Peter and the Minnesota River. And I'd always sit there looking out the window. I was like, God, can you imagine if a tornado came through here? You'd see, you'd have a front row seat right up here, and it happened. And but yeah, so.
And it was, you know, you think about it. I mean, that's probably, what, 3 minutes?
3 minutes, yeah.
You know, that a tornado actually does that. And here we
yep.
sit 20, however many years later.
Right.
21 years later, and everybody still talks about yep. the St. Peter tornado and whatever
were.
Tornado. You
sure.
Know. Yep. But when I saw North Minneapolis,
was it? 1965.
Yeah, 65. Yeah. I mean, the legendary WCCO broadcast, mm-hmm. you know. When I saw North Minneapolis after it went up there, and people have always said, well, why don't they hit cities? And I can't remember if there's a scientific reason for that or if it's just that if you look at the geography, you know, cities are a pretty small footprint in the
yes.
overall scheme of
right.
the United States.
Yeah. I think that is a myth that they can't hit cities. Cause
I think so, too.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's you're right. It's you're talking about a small scale, but I've heard Paul Douglas talk about this, too, because I think there was one. I can't remember. There was a town where it went right through a big city. But, yeah, that one and then South Minneapolis one went through there.
Yep.
That was probably 10 years, 15 years ago. Those are the ones you remember, especially working here, the ones that I'd covered. I remember being in Ladysmith, Wisconsin, the Siren tornado, seeing like a full-size pickup truck in a tree just kind of wrapped
you
around.
You saw one of those, huh?
Yeah. It was just like, God, yeah, look at that.
Can't happen.
Yeah. They were talking, I think it was Siren, where they were saying that the plastic lids at the Dairy Queen, it hit the Dairy Queen, and the plastic lids had enough force that they were cutting into, like, sheetrock because of the
Yeah, you
the
hear
tornado.
About these bizarre things,
yeah.
right? Like a comb goes through a mirror,
yes.
you know?
And they, yeah.
I can remember just as a kid, the Sirens, you know, we had them back then in a small town of Gaylord, and you knew noon and 6 o'clock, the whistle would blow. And then the first Wednesday of every month, they do the test, right? The emergency broadcast, whatever it is. And so anything outside of that you knew was, especially you could tell because it's hot and humid. And I can just remember being in the basement with my family, you know, radio on to CCO.
Sure. Yep.
And that's it. I mean, you couldn't, we lived on a lake out there. And the theory always was, because they pick up steam as they come across lakes. But I never saw one. I never witnessed one. The only thing I remember is being in that basement, wherever it is that you're supposed
yeah.
to go in the basement
right.
and going, holy cow, this is serious stuff,
yep.
you know?
Yeah.
I tell you what, we're going to come back with a guy, Jamie Milbrett, who is a storm chaser. He
mm-hmm.
chased him last night. I don't know what that looks like or what he saw, but we'll find out.
Well, there's a science to that. I mean, those guys, everybody says, oh, you're nuts. But they know what they're doing and they know where to approach from. And, I mean, those guys have become invaluable to the folks us who work in newsrooms, not only would they call and they report stuff, but you know, they're all on Twitter now. And I mean, we get instant feedback.
Yep.
You know, so like back in the past, it's like, okay, well, this isn't a radar indicated tornado. But now instantly, you know, we're seeing pictures. It's like, well, yeah, that's a tornado on the ground.
Yeah,
like
no
in
question.
Redwood Falls
yep.
last night. So,
and you know this, but in the times of the night, you know, over the years, I've done this for so many years now, several times you interrupt with weather.
Yep.
And I got to tell you, in some respects, you don't want to say look forward to it, but it's a little of the best of CCO.
Oh, sure.
Because you get these people calling in.
Yep.
Everybody's participating in it, and
mm-hmm.
they're saying there's a tree down here, and the power's down here, and I ran into a puddle under this bridge. And it's pretty cool. It's kind of – I hate to use the word fun, but it's exciting radio.
It is exciting radio, and, you know, hopefully there's still a place for that. But like I said, as we keep talking about nowadays, you know, everybody's got the – on social media, they know instantly
yep.
what's happening.
Complete with pictures.
They know the up-to-date reports, radar. It's just – But yeah, it's, I mean, that's kind of our call here, you know,
yep.
when the weather gets
yep.
bad.
And, yep. And it's fun. Yep. Yep. Thank you, Adam.
You got it. A texter does remind us years ago, a tornado went through downtown Fort Worth, Texas.
Okay.
So yeah,
case in point. Yeah.
Yep, there you go.
Jimmy Milbrad does just that. He chases storms. He chased it last night. What did he find out? We'll ask him next. So you've heard the term storm chaser. You have Mike Maxine for Chet Hartman on News Talk 830 WCCO. Last night, there were some storms to be chased out in western part of this state. Straight west, 212 that way. Keep going. Highway 5, Highway 19. Wabasso, folks, in Redwood Falls, that area. Got hit pretty hard. Some of you may have seen the video of the tornado that touched down there. Jimmy Milbrett was out and about scouting as a storm chaser. He didn't see the tornado that many of us saw on video. He probably did on video, but he did see wall clouds and everything else. And I always thought it's interesting what motivates someone to go out and what do you need to know if you want to chase storms. Jamie, thank you for joining us.
Hi.
What was it like last night? When did you know you had something going?
Well, it was about 5:30, I guess, and I was just leaving New Ulm. I was heading west, kind of northwest, actually, and I could see it was really dark off in the distance, and I didn't think much of it. I didn't know that we were supposed to even have any severe storms yesterday. And then I heard a warning come across the radio that was saying that there was a tornado warning by Redwood Falls moving southeast. I'm like, oh, wow, that's pretty much the exact area that I'm headed for. So I drove as far as Sleepy Eye, and I was listening to the radio and the warnings and stuff, and they were kind of saying the towns that this tornado was, like, heading for. I'm like, that's exactly where I'm going, so I can't go that way. So in Sleepy Eye, I went south on Highway 4. I wanted to get south of the storm because I knew it was moving southeast, and I thought I could go west and get a good view of the storm. So I found a road to go west, and I was heading west down that, but there was too many trees. You couldn't really see the horizon and the storm clouds. And then I got finally an opening, and I was, like, right under this huge area of rotation, and so that was kind of scary. So
What does that look like? Is it just pitch black above you or what?
Well, not that area, because that's in the rain-free area. It's called the rain-free base. That's where the strongest area of updraft is in a storm.
What does that mean? The strongest area updraft means what?
Well, that's where all the inflow, all the air at the surface is flowing in.
Oh, it's taking it up right there?
Storm and picking it up, and that's where your tornado would form out of that area. So that's the area that's not raining. So it's not that dark. It's like dark all behind it, like pitch black, dark. And then that area is lighter. And, I mean, you know it when you see it. You look up and all the clouds above you are just rotating. And you know, normally I wouldn't have got that close, but I couldn't see that area because there were so many trees in the way. And so I got to that area, and then I had a quick turnaround and drive about 100 miles an hour back the other way. And so I got back to that, I think it was Highway 4 that I was on, and I kept going south because I knew I had to get south. But the storm was kind of coming southeast. Luckily, it was only moving like at 10 to 20 miles an hour, so I had time to get out of the way. So, wasn't really familiar with that area. I found a gravel road that was heading west because I wanted to get west again. So I got on that gravel road, and that was kind of scary too, because that road all of a sudden curved back to the north and kind of right back into the path of the storm. So that's one thing you kind of have to be aware about when you're chasing these things is make sure you have an escape route and, especially on unfamiliar roads.
Really? So if you're going to chase storms, one of the things is if I'm going down this road, I better know what plan B is. It better not just be this road.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I've been taking storm chasing classes for like 25 years. I've always been interested in it. And so I know what to look for and stuff. But what they always tell you, too, is, you know, don't just be watching, you know, one particular storm out in the distance. Watch what's right over your head, too, because there can be stuff forming over your head that chop right down on you, not careful. That's almost kind of what happened too. So I was watching this one cell, and then there was this other cell that was forming and coming kind of towards us too, and I thought I was in the clear, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh my god, it's rotating over there again. So we had to pack up and get out of there in a hurry again, and then we finally got to a spot. We were about 4 miles south of Cuffrey. and we kept going west. And then that's when I saw, then I was in a safe spot there because I had the radar on my phone. I could tell where this thing was going. And so I was to the southwest of the storm. The storm was moving southeast. And then that's the one that I saw a wall cloud. I saw more rotation. And then that's the one that eventually there was a tornado warning issued for St. James.
Yeah, area. Leveled that turkey barn, huh?
Yeah, I saw that in the paper today. So I didn't actually see any tornadoes, but...
You saw the wall clouds and the activity. How close have you come to tornadoes?
I've never seen a tornado in my life, unfortunately.
And you chased it. Yesterday would have been the perfect time, huh?
Right. Well, yeah, and it just happened by accident. I was actually going up to a casino at Jackpot Junction. And,
no!
And so this thing was Jackpot's northwest in New Ulm. That's where I was headed, and that was right into the path of these storms. So, but I usually don't even chase storms. I live in New Ulm, and when they're coming over to New Ulm, our area, I mean, I'm out looking at them, but I don't, like, go out chasing them usually.
Yeah.
Yesterday was kind of unique for me.
So you did see a lot of, and what you see is fairly scary, knowing what you know?
It was actually being that close. And actually, you know, I can't be certain because I was driving, and, you know, when you're driving that fast, and your adrenaline's going, and you're trying to look at the storm and the road. But I looked off to my right back to this area of rotation, and it looked like there was a debris cloud on the ground, like from a tornado. There was no visible funnel, but, you know, like they teach in the spotting classes, always look at the ground for a debris cloud first because there might not be a funnel yet. So I think I saw a brief touchdown on that area, just like out in the field, and then it dissipated, you know, within 10 seconds. But, I mean, I can't be 100% certain of that, but sure. I think it might have been.
You were just out looking for a good storm. Hey, Jamie, thank you very much for sharing it with us.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
Jamie Milbritt out there, and that tornado video is pretty compelling, I suppose, in this day and age. And I don't know what the rule of thumb is. I don't know if anybody knows out there. How close can you be to a tornado and photograph it before you better get out of the way? I don't know. I don't know if that's a gut feel or if there's something scientific about it, and there's X amount of miles and et cetera. I don't know. But it's interesting to hear him say, because he's out there in that kind of tornado alley, which is, you know, overstated by Minnesota standards. It's probably not that, you know, it doesn't happen very often. But he's never seen one either. So when you really start to think about it, I think most of us have only seen tornadoes on videotape, because if there is one in the area, we're probably down in the basement. Just a thought. Plenty more to come. Mike Max in for Chad Hart. But a bit later, we'll talk about the LPGA, the PGA of America Women's Championship is here in Chaska. And a lot of those people at the top leaderboard many times, they're making a lot of money. A lot of them that are playing this weekend are not. And it made me think, what would you do to chase down your dream? What would you be willing to hang in there to do if it meant chasing your dream and living your dream? We'll also visit with a local that's now an executive on that tour. Plenty more to come. Mike Max in for Chad Hartman at WCCO. Welcome back. Mike Max in for Chad Hartman. News Talk 830 WCCO. Twins in Kansas City tonight, game two. Not a good night last night for the Twins. They fell 4-1. 6:30 the pregame, 7 o'clock first pitch. Dan and Corey with the call. Mike Lyons is a CBS News military analyst, and he's lived it too. He's served this country as well. And so his analysis is... based not just on reporting duties, but actually being on the front lines. And he joins us now as we try to get our arms around or get a grasp of what's going on with the U.S.-Iran relations. And Mike, thank you for joining us.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Let me start with this drone that we took down. I'm trying to figure it out. This drone is how big? How is it detected? You know, this whole term drone, most of us, I think about this little helicopter that flies and people are taking pictures of a lake above a lake or somebody boating or water skiing or something. Obviously, this is more sophisticated, but what is a drone that you would use in the military capacity?
So it's a kind of drone that is used for surveillance. It's about the size, it's got the wingspan of a 747, a commercial airliner, let's say.
Oh, is that big?
Yeah, it's big, weighs a lot, costs a lot. A ton of surveillance and intelligence and upgraded equipment. This one in particular, the Red Hawk, has been in the inventory for almost 20 years. It's kind of the early phase drone of unmanned aerial aircraft that before they started becoming armed, you know, kind of sleeker and more agile, let's say, 10 years after that, 2008, 2009, when we started those different kinds of missions with drones that were armed. This one does not have that capability. And so it flies high, it flies slow, and it's designed to collect information. For example, it doesn't have to fly over Iran in order to collect information about Iran as well. It's got tremendous over-the-horizon capability to it. So there's no question it wasn't in Iran airspace, and they fired it up. I think they looked at this and said, they were warned that casualties would be the red line, and if you cross that line, then you would see a response. And they looked at this and said, well, we could take this out. There would be no casualties if we do. And it's about the limit as to what the extent of our attacks could be.
Sure. And there would be no question based on their military technology that they knew it was a drone?
Well, they could have made a mistake, and they could have potentially shot down a commercial airliner, although commercial airliners do have a different beacon system. They tell everybody, here I am, I'm an airliner, I'm coming. This one doesn't have that. This one flies stealthily, let's say. It tries to, at least, but based on its electronic signature, it tried to. I'm sure they were convinced that it was. The Iranians shot down a drone of ours back in 2011, a different one, an X-117. It more like looks like a stealth one. It, again, collects intelligence, doesn't fire missiles. And what they did was they shot that down. They probably matched that signature to this one here that gave them the confidence enough that it was likely a drone.
And so Donald Trump, President Trump's first response is he said it could have been a crazy man firing away, almost giving the impression that maybe it was not someone that was ordered to do it, but someone that did it on his own. Possible?
It's possible. It's possible that that happened, as the Republican guards are not necessarily connected to the government and don't always follow what the government wants to do there in Iran. And he likely got that idea from the CIA at the briefing when they came and talked to him about it. Whether or not that's the case, I think in some ways they shot it down because they knew they could and get away with it, knowing that it still could have led to a catastrophic response. It pushes the envelope, but that is possible. There's no question that in some cases, and that's where these wars sometimes start, at the lowest levels where someone makes a bad decision, a tactical decision that ends up having strategic implications.
Mike Lyons is our guest, CBS News military analyst, talking about the relationship between the U.S. and Iran right now. And so then he authorizes a strike and calls off. Does that happen in the history? Has that happened? I always think about Top Gun, the movie, you know, where the real deal, and everybody's looking, and you're kind of right there with them going, oh my God, you're really going into the fight now. And so I assume that's what the pilots and everybody else experienced yesterday. But is it common over the years that a mission would start and be intercepted?
Well, it's possible at the tactical level if a general officer sees that, for example, that civilians have moved into the area, if we're about to violate a law of land warfare. So it's possible. I think the president's tweet is maybe pushing it a little bit. The fact that 150 civilians or people would die was likely briefed to him before. It wasn't something that they thought of at the last minute. I mean, and that's that. I've always thought that was going to be the reason why I didn't think he was going to respond right away, because knowing full well, he could have warned the Iranians, for example, that we were going to destroy the ballistic missile base where those rockets came from. I mean, when you shoot a drone out of the sky, it has a return address, you know, where the missile came from. And he could have warned the Iranians that we were going to do that, and the Iranians could have moved civilians there, and they could have made it a lot worse. So I think that once he realized and recognized that this line is actually casualties, he decided against it.
There is no chance that he would ever. I mean, as you play this game and the sophistication of the game that you play on an international basis, is there ever a chance where you literally do allow them, wheels up, go get them, boys, and then you purposely all along intend to call them back just to let Iran know that we're serious?
Well, I think they're out there all the time. And what the issue is right now is turning on or off the sensors and loading up some of the cruise missiles and the Tomahawks. And it's a matter of an additional logistic step. But anytime right now, based on the situation, anytime we put the Air Force or the Navy fighters with the fleet that we have currently there right now, they're circling, they're ready to go, they're on standby. So again, we're always locked and loaded from that perspective. They're not waiting back. It's just a matter of getting what the targets are and programming them in their computers and then firing away.
According to at least one report, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and National Security Advisor John Bolton didn't want the reversal. They wanted to follow through with this mission. Unusual? Does that jive with what, is that consistent with what you'd expect?
Well, it doesn't surprise me for those two individuals. This is where it comes down to personality, and it comes down to who has the responsibility of it, and the president has the responsibility. But it doesn't surprise me. Both of those two are have always been hawks when it comes to the Iranians. And, you know, feel that there's a mentality that if we even attack them and set them back some, it'll be better than where they're going right now. We saw that we made some pretty strategic, bad strategic decisions in early 2000s in Iraq. And I think that's been, you know, we don't want to make the same ones again right now.
What scares you the most about if we do decide to be the enforcer in Iran?
I read a comment over the weekend that I think I kind of agree with, and that is if we decide to go to war with Iran right now, especially without the help of our allies and do this alone, we'll lose this century to the Chinese. I think there are so many unintended consequences that take place, and we'll take our eye off the ball about how we need to compete with the Chinese, not just from a military perspective, but from an economic, cyber, all the things that we have to do. I think there's some kernel of truth to that, and which is why we can't get bogged down here. We went into Iraq in 2003, and we thought we'd be in and we thought we'd be out, and we didn't think it was going to take so long. We've been fighting this endless war in Afghanistan since 2001 for good reason, because we took our eye off the ball in Afghanistan to focus on Iraq. Iraq went way longer than it did. Now we're still focusing on Afghanistan. If we decide to get into something with Iran right now, much bigger, much larger operation, it could set the United States back, and we could turn around 25 years from now and said this has been a waste of time if the Chinese have taken over most of the things in the world that we still want to control.
Mm. Does Iran scare you from a military standpoint?
No, I mean, it would be over very quickly, and that's the whole issue. It's what people did learn from the 1990s is you don't fight the United States conventionally. It'd be no match. So what wouldn't be necessarily a conventional war that would be the problem. It would be the terrorism that they could unleash in places, and Hezbollah and all these militia and these all these groups, and how that would work. That it'd be the network. It'd be similar to kind of the war, this hybrid warfare that's been going on in Iraq.
Hmm. Very. And as this plays out over the next couple of weeks, is there anything we should look for, be paying attention to?
I think what our allies are doing and how well we're aligning them and how well we're keeping sanctions on, and whether or not they're on our side on this thing. If the European allies stick with us, we don't expect Russia to. We don't expect China to. And that's the other side to this. If Iran, you're seeing the way this is lining up with China, Russia, and Iran, and you throw North Korea in there and Syria, that's a pretty formidable opponent. And if you project that 10 or 15 years down the road, you could have potentially a third world war against them versus the rest of the world.
Mike, appreciate it very much. Thank you for your insight, and thank you for your good work always.
Great. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Mike Lyons, military, served in the military, and is provides analysis for CBS along the way. Here's the thing. You come in here on a Friday, right, and you're putting a show together, and it's noon to three. And these are the questions that you ask in newsrooms across the world, across certainly the United States. But it's an interesting philosophical question. This is a really important issue, the U.S., Iran, and what it could lead to, and the implications, the international scope, all those things. And yet, there's a feeling of, I'm not sure the audience is that all that engaged in this. I'm not sure that if it's not fought on this soil, that we get real involved or want to spend a lot of time with. And I've sat in so many news meetings over the years, and these are, I wish everybody could see the conversations that you have, because you're trying to satisfy your audience and give them what you want, and you're trying to give your audience what they need. This is a really important issue. This is one that at minimum, we need to at least be educated on. And yet, there's a part of me that's going, well, it's Friday. If I'm driving down the road and I'm going to the cabin, I don't want to deal with Iran. I don't want to sit and think about that. I want happy thoughts. I want to go party for a while. I want to get away from this. My question is, do you think we care enough about international anything unless it's right here in the U.S.? 651-989-9226. You know, you could see the ramifications of tariffs, for example, because it affected farmers right here in Minnesota. But when it's military like this, and it's so, pardon the pun, but it's so foreign to us, we can't figure out exactly what it is they're doing tactically and how this looks and how this feels. I don't know how much people want to engage in it, and yet on the other hand, you go, this is really important stuff that we need to be up to speed on. David, you were about to say something.
Well, yeah, I agree with your sentiment, and if I'm driving around today, I'm thinking about going to the cabin on the first day of summer, and is this weekend going to be a washout or not? And things in the Middle East or what our military is doing, unless like we declare war or some big step like that, I don't think I care about it that much. But the problem is if 6 months from now, whatever, God forbid we do declare war, all of a sudden I feel like, oh man, maybe I should have been paying attention for the last 10 years of diplomacy. And now our young men and young women are boots on the ground in a different country, and all of a sudden you care a lot. But we miss the steps along the way, and it's hard to determine what's real and what's not.
And you want to give the audience what they want, but my gosh, if you're not on top of this, you know, and it's hard to engage in it, you don't want to go down that road of, well, this is just depressing news. This isn't what I want to think about. I want to be – and I guess probably many of us have a certain overconfidence in our own military where we just believe, hey, they're on top of this. And some of it is because we've led each other to believe we've got this great military. Maybe we do. Maybe we don't. I don't even know. But we believe that there are people at a higher pay grade than us that go, hey, I got this figured out. Don't worry about it. I don't know. But when you hear him talking, you put it in layman's terms, you go, you know, we all need to kind of amp up our game a little bit here. We all need to be a little bit more concerned. You know, if you talk to people from a certain generation that lived through Pearl Harbor, many of them are no longer with us, obviously, but to almost a person, they will say it all changed that day. It was never the same after Pearl Harbor. We never felt the exact same way again. Obviously, that was the beginning of our involvement in World War II, but it was also this signal that they went to Hawaii, and that's part of the U.S., and they came right after our troops. I think the same thing happened to my generation with the Twin Towers in 2001. After 2001, it's never been the same. You feel different. You're reminded of it every time you go to the airport and you walk through count long lines of security. And every time I do that, I think about 2001. Take your phone calls on it, 651-989-9226, or text 651-989-9226. Is it important that we engage in international philosophies and military? Are we better served just letting someone else do that and going out and living our life? That's next. Welcome back. Mike Max in for Chad Hartman, News Talk 830 WCCO. Henry Lake in for Paul and Jordana. Then Dan and Corey, Mike's side, for the Twins of the Kansas City Royals tonight. Lots of good stuff coming up on News Talk 830 WCCO. The Twins try to get back on track tonight. Get WCCO's news delivered straight to your inbox every day. Sign up now at WCCORadio.com/get news. That's at WCCORadio.com/get the news. How concerned should we be about what happens in the Middle East? How concerned should we be about when we see this little dust up with Iran? What does it even mean to us here in Minnesota? Let's go to Brian, who's been waiting patiently on line one. Brian, you're on.
Hey, guys, thanks. Yeah, I just I was just thinking about your question, and, you know, it occurs to me, aren't we all just better off if we mind our own business? I mean, I'm not callous to terrible things happening in other parts of the world and, you know, wanting to jump in and, you know, helping people that can't help themselves, that kind of thing. But I mean, that's not usually even how it's framed up anymore. It's all about, you know, American interests here and American interests there. And I think that's where the real question mark is. How much interest does America really have in Syria, Iraq, Iran? I mean, those guys are never coming to bomb us. And if we don't get involved in their conflict with Israel, we probably don't have any terrorist issues either. So, yeah, I mean, why don't we just worry about ourselves? And I mean, we give Israel so many billions every year, they ought to be able to fight that out themselves. They can turn that whole area into glass if they wanted to.
I appreciate your call, Brian, but we need to defend Israel. That's number one. And you look over the Middle East there, and if we don't, that's a tremendous alliance for us. But above and beyond that, in general, the philosophy of the United States has always been, we're not looking to punch you first. But if you punch us, we're punching you back. We're not looking, you take our drone down, we're going to do something about it. We're not looking in general to create the fight or take the fight to you. But if you want to bring it to us, we're going to fight you back. And if you do not have that philosophy, it's not as easy as to say just stay home and mind your own business, because if you don't have that philosophy, then they're going to punch you in the nose. And if you allow them to punch you in the nose, guess what? They're going to punch you in the nose again. And if they think they can get away with it, they're going to punch you in the nose again. And so at some point in time, and philosophically, this is what the U.S. has been built on, militarily speaking, is you have to be ready to punch back. And when you do, you have to be aggressive. You have to set the tone. There's an old saying, a military saying, is allow them to tell you what the rules are and then dominate them inside their own rules. Meaning, if this is the way they want to play the game, fine. Then play the game at such a high level that you dominate them. They set the rules. Okay, now we'll play by your rules and we will destroy you if that's what we have to do. And that's been, and you cannot get away with, particularly in this day and age, saying that we're just going to mind our own business, because it just doesn't work that way. When you allow people to become bullies, they will become bullies. And if the U.S. can't stand up, then I don't know who will out there. On the other side, the PGA of America Championship is out of the Hazeltine. Molly Gallatin used to work for the Minnesota Twins. Now she's an executive on that tour. And I have learned more from her about that tour, being out there 3 days this week and just visiting with her. It's a fascinating. It's fascinating competition. She works on the men's side as well. We'll visit with her. She's coming up next. Mike Max for Chad Hartman.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.